Horses with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
From Delaware Park, for the first time ever, and for the first time in a long time, together, J.J. Gracie, Tony Black,
and you,
and me, and it, I mean, literally, we're talking 2007, 15 years since the three of us were on at the same time together.
Longer than that.
I don't know, 2007, right, Jay? 2006? I think seven. I think we...
Maybe you're probably right.
I think it's seven.
I know I was doing a Fleet Alex when for yeah. Sirius. Now I don't remember. I'm an old man. I'm gonna be 80 years old.
Well,
I have to use GPS to find my studio.
JJ, you're 80. I'm 70. I'll be 71 this year. 2007, I was still riding 5, 6, 7 a day. And you were still training 2007.
I still am. I still got a couple of beaters.
But I mean, you had a half a barn or a barn full of horses, and I used to come over every morning and not get on anything but hide from everybody else in your barn.
Oh, yeah. He would sit in my... Let me set the stage for you. We're at Keystone or whatever hell. That attracts that more names from criminals.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Keystone in Philadelphia Park, the times that I was really doing a lot of riding and I was with you.
Right.
It wasn't
right.
Parks yet.
So I had a... I'm in barn 17, okay? And I had a window cut out, so we never really had to go out to see our horse. We could look through the window. So Mr. Black would come in, sit down. I'm not here. Okay.
Yeah. And I didn't have to go see anybody because if they didn't see me, they figured I wasn't there. And the only way they wouldn't see me is if I was hiding in your tack room.
Right.
And that's what I would do. And I'd look out the window every once in a while. And if anybody walked down the horse path that looked like a trainer, I would duck down.
The idea that the two of you, and I think of all those conversations going back 2005, 6, and 7, and Joe, you had Tony. Tony kind of came with the whole show, right? I mean, you had already had Tony signed on.
Tony and I started broadcasting in 1986, okay, when I was doing Philadelphia Park Live, 7-hour live TV show every day. So I knew right then and there Tony was able to think on his feet and add something to the equation, not take anything away. And Tony and I bonded, I don't know when, but it was way before 1986. You know?
Yeah, we really did. And you know, JJ had a lot of respect for what I was doing on a horse's back, and the respect was mutual. I had a lot of respect for what he did. And we had some horses that would make you think twice every once in a while. How about a horse like Fast Today, Reliable Jeff? I can name these horses I won not one race on, not just claiming races, but stake races. And they had some quirks and personalities of their own. And it just seemed like JJ and I got the best out of them because we weren't intimidated by what they would do or wouldn't do. Well, you know, Fast Today, he was a trip, wasn't he?
Listen.
Yvonne's Delight, another one.
Right.
She wouldn't turn over in the gate, would she?
Yolanda B., she flipped three times before they kicked him, all right?
Yeah.
So I said to Tony, I said, listen, Jay, I know. If you don't throw me off at least two times, we're not going to win. It's true. Is that true, Tony? Is that
yeah.
true?
Yeah.
Well, now, these days, you can address, I mean, we're going to touch on a bunch of topics, I'm sure, this morning, and weave in the news and everything that's gone on this week, and also look ahead to Saturday with the Saturday draws ready to go. But in this era, a horse flips in the gate once, that's it, scratch. They don't even, there's not even, I mean, if a horse is acting up sometimes now in the gate, the track vet, there's no margin for that, it seems, at all, Joe. And
here's the deal, Steve. They have a state vet that works for the track, works for the state, and they're behind the gate. So if an incident like that occurs, they're going to examine the horse and find out if it's okay to ride or if the jock all right. But now, if they have a little scratch on there or their hair's out of place, they scratch them. No matter what Tony would say, listen, I know this horse. I win many races on this horse. He's fine. Just leave me and the horse alone, okay? Just leave us alone. But they can't. They've got the eyes of everybody looking down on them, and they don't want something to happen on their watch,
yeah,
okay?
Exactly.
But meanwhile, I agree with it, but I totally disagree with it. I'm old school horse trainer, okay? As I told you before, right in that building over there, I got my trainer's license in 1968, right there. But I was training horses since I was a kid. My father had horses. So I came to know it was not hard. I was go to school, go get up in the morning, be at the barn at 4 o'clock, like Tony, go do what I need to do, run back to school, not paying attention to what I was doing at school because I had to figure out what I'm going to do there with these horses, okay? So maybe I wasn't the best of students because my head wasn't into it. I just wanted to get the hell out of it, and I did. But Tony and I and you have seen the best of horse racing. Horse racing now, all we're doing is rearranging chairs on a ship that's going down. And this ship has taken some serious torpedoes, serious hits. And I'll get into that because we cannot go on the way we're going with Hissa, Hissa, call it whatever you want. I just don't understand. Since the beginning of time, horse racing has never changed. It's never changed. They do the tacking horses up the same way. We gallop the same way. We do everything the same way. Only thing now is we have people calling balls and strikes. Don't know which end eats.
Yeah, but they wore suit and ties and they had shiny shoes. These people calling balls and strikes for us. You know, they were never back there in the trenches. In fact, half of them would need a GPS to find the backside.
Yeah. Well, listen, Hissa checks their brains at the stable gate if they know where the stable gate is. You know what I mean? They don't. I'm not saying that this game doesn't need some direction, but it doesn't need the kind of direction that they're leading us into. They're leading us into a dead-end street because we cannot.
They've removed instinct and common sense from the jockey's job.
Well, I wanted you, Tony, on this topic, to absolutely represent the way the jocks have to deal with this. And JJ, you for the horsemen, and of course there is a story already from this week with the injunction that West Virginia and Louisiana got. That happened Tuesday, and I didn't get a chance yesterday. Thanks, by the way, to Seth Merrow and to Chuck. Yesterday, he did a fabulous job. Everybody loved the show yesterday from Saratoga with the guys hosting. I've also got to fit in our visit to Chincoteague to watch the pony swim,
right,
which is the craziest thing I've ever seen. It was fabulous. But this injunction that will at least pause things for a while in Louisiana and West Virginia, there's been such frustration, and I recommended to people on Monday they read Dave Bassler's, if you saw Dave Bassler's op-ed that turned up in the Pollock Report from the Ohio HBPA, Dave, I thought, laid out a lot of smart objections to the way this is being implemented. Tony, you and I were talking about not just the penal, penalizing jocks and training.
Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA unlock leadership.
Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Pons family's country life in Maryland.
At from the steward stand or from an independent monitor that says, I watched this jock's performance.
Pause up for a moment. Casey lost us for a second, but now we're back. That was weird.
I watched this jock's performance.
Wait, we're back. There we go. I don't know if it was us or you, but we got disconnected. Go ahead, Tony.
If you have monitors that know what they're looking at, they'll say, I watched his jock's performance. He used a stick, and it wasn't in a limited number of times, but he used it, and he did not use it in an abusive manner. They can designate the difference between abuse and use. You can't make a blanket rule that designates that. All you're doing is limiting a jock from using it in a way that gets the best possible performance from his horse. It'd be like me telling a boxer, you can only throw three jabs, and then you got to throw an overhand right or a left. You can't do that. It's instinct that makes an athlete be proficient and using his equipment to the best possible way it should be used, not blanket rules.
Well, listen, Hissa, the two things that were supposed to help the most was the horses and the gamblers. It's the two things that hurting the most, because the horses cannot get what they need to run, and the jockeys can't do what they want to do. All right, I had a horse the other day running a press clout, one off at 8-5, supposed to win from here to the grandstand over there. He's a lazy guy. You need to turn that thing over, and you got to wake him up a little bit.
Right.
So we get to the 16th pole, and he's doing this. Turn the stick over. Hit him, please. Right? I said, Jay, I hit this horse six times. I said, you know what? I think this is the race that I decided to come January 1st. I am no longer going to participate in the sport as a trainer. I will, I'll let my daughter train him. I'll let my wife own him. But you can't insult my intelligence all the time the way you do and think that I'm going to be able to absorb ludicrous stuff that you... When we signed in to Racehorses, because Hissa made a sign, all we signed was a blank check, because they keep changing rules as they go on.
That's very true. It's true. And it's funny how they've laid out this alleged comment period. You make the comments. People have their offer their perspective and hoping that it's going to be constructive, and it doesn't get it's not even considered, let alone implemented. The situation, I brought this up a couple of weeks ago when there was a ridiculous broadside at John Velasquez by a member of racing media, quote unquote, and basically saying, oh, how hypocritical of John Velasquez, he was part of the rulemaking. No, he wasn't. Johnny offered his insights. They were completely ignored. And then when the Jockey Guild, joined the latest lawsuit, you're gonna insult John Velasquez with a complete misrepresentation of the facts.
He was invited just to pacify the horsemen. That's it, to pacify. But he wasn't listened to in any way, from my understanding, when person that wasn't there. I can cite many examples over the years that designating a specific number of times that the stick can be used was bordering on dangerous. I can remember an old horse I rode for J.J. Gracie called Reliable Jeff that would really lay in through the stretch. And one night we won a stake race at Garden State Park, and somebody ran up on the inside of me, but I was well in control of the situation because I had the right rein and my stick in my left hand. And J.J. said, they claimed foul. What do you think? I said, well, he'd have needed a skinny horse to get through there. I says, because there was never enough room. So when I got on the phone to the stewards, they said, what happened through the stretch? I said, nothing. I said, he would have needed an awful skinny horse to come through between me and the rail. And the stewards laughed, and the race was official.
Well,
but that was something. If you would have designated I could only use my stick a few times, that would have interfered with the safety of me, my horse, and the guy on the inside of me.
Tony, let me ask you a question, because you're the right person to ask for this. How many times in a race, and you folks out there listen to this.
I was going to follow up the same thing.
How many times do you really have to hit a horse? It depends on the situation, correct?
Right. Depends on the situation, and it depends on the horse, where a rider even has ridden a horse and maybe knows him a little bit. Or he instinctually feels what that horse is doing when he's striking him. You strike a horse sometimes, they pin their ears back, and they don't accelerate. Sometimes instead of striking them, you want to cock your stick and wave it at them. It would be like threatening a little kid. If you do it again, I'm going to hit you.
Right.
And you know, that's how you get a little kid's attention. Well, sometimes that's how you get a horse's attention. But you have to be able to cock your stick, wave it, strike him once or twice, and not count how many times once or twice after that I hit him when I wave it at him. And if a horse is lugging in, how about a horse that's lugging in and he's got a sore on the right side of his mouth, on the left side of his mouth, and you're pulling out, or the right side of his mouth, and you're using the reins to guide him, and it's hitting that sore. Well, if he's getting out, you need to take your stick and maybe strike him on the shoulder and loosen up on the reins. Now, if he's getting in and he's got a cut in his mouth, or he's got a tender mouth, doesn't even have to be a cut, where the reins and the bit are not doing the job, if he's lugging in, you have to take your stick, wave it, strike him on the left side, loosen up the reins, because the bit is what causing him to go in or out, because of his mouth is tender on one side or the other. So you can't tell me that a rule can foresee those potential needs of a stick, or that potentially saying, oh, well, you used it six times, you can't use it again. You have to let a rider have instinct, use his instinct, and know what's best for the performance of that horse. And if it's a rider that is a slasher and he's not really using his instinct to the best of the horse's performance, pull him up. You don't need a rule. You need people in the steward stand that know what they're looking at, and they can determine the difference between use and abuse. They can determine the difference.
Well, each racetrack designates a safety steward, I think they call them now.
Yep.
And they count how many times.
Yeah.
What, Tony, explain to me and to the folks out there listening to us, when you turn, you know, when you turn your crop over, you reach back to hit them,
right.
Okay, that counts as one hit.
Right.
Now, how much effect do you get by not picking that stick up?
Well, here's what it affects the use of the stick. I have a horse that's getting out, but I can't turn my stick and cock it up again. I can't cock my stick. Do you ever try showing a horse the stick with it down? If you're not going to get the right angle at his eye where he can see it. When you cock it up, you can wave it in front of his face. But you telling me I can't cock the stick, or I can only strike him six times, or whatever the rule is, and however they're determining how the rule is being implemented. You can't designate that, because what you're doing is taking the rider's instinctual feel, what you can't see but what I can feel when I'm on their back.
Positively.
You're taking that away from me.
Yeah. There's no question about that. You'll remember this because you probably were with me. I'm doing Philadelphia Park Live, and we have the Pennsylvania Derby. It's a horse called Broad Brush.
Right, I rode him.
Okay, now
I rode Broad Brush before that he bolted in the Pennsylvania Derby.
Right, so
I rode him and won his second race of his life, and he bolted, and I almost in that same spot.
I'm on the air with you, Gannon, and we're doing the Pennsylvania Derby, and Broad Brush. Stop making a left. He's making a right.
A strong right, which he did with me one day in an allowance race. And any other than
if you're sitting on the middle.
Maybe I taught him how to do that.
Well, you taught him well. Okay. So if you're sitting in the middle of this horse's back and they're going here.
And it was Cordero,
right,
who does
Angel.
Know a little something about race
right.
riding.
Right. Angel had the mount.
So I said to Gannon, this is going to get ugly. He says, what do you mean? I said, he's not going to turn. He's blowing the turn. I mean, he's bolting. So Doc Penny, God rest his soul. Okay?
Waving the arms.
He was standing over there going, you know, and all of a
sudden, his arms.
How good this horse is. He completely makes the left-hand turn and goes down and wins. But only because of Cordero and the ability that horse had.
Right.
Now, if you that happened today, Cordero, Broad Brush, Doc Penny.
Through the outside fence.
over the fence and take all three with him.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to digest something when you have it. Now, if there was a steward, this man should have been the steward.
They said I didn't have enough administrative.
I know.
I had 40 years in the saddle, but no administrative experience.
Who needs that kind of experience when you know what's going on in a race? You know You know, nobody knows everything.
You know, I had my rope certification. I was racing official accredited program and passed it.
Sure. Right.
I passed it with flying colors. But I wasn't qualified to be a steward because I didn't have 150 days in the office.
5 months working in a racing office.
Yeah, but I had 40 years in the saddle. But I don't know what I'm looking at. And you know the whole thing about it? When you have that years in that saddle, if there's some kind of a problem with the administration or administrative duty of a steward, you call the lawyers. You don't let him handle the whatever the suit is.
Well,
call
here's
a lawyer.
Here's the issue you have now. If you have a gripe against HISA, is just an organization hired by the government. They really should not have the ability to make these laws.
Well, that's the legal challenge. That's the basis for the essentially for the legal challenge. The jockey club and the administrators that are involved, they feel that their legal recommendation and advice was that there's enough precedent and there's other oversight agencies that the real estate industry has something like this. We'll see, because it's not etched in stone. I mean, it's law, but as we found out just weeks ago, there's some capriciousness lately to, you know, the way laws and settled law is being administered in this country. So we'll see.
Well, you pointed out when we came in that yesterday, Tuesday or Wednesday, I don't know which track of days, that West Virginia and Louisiana got a temporary injunction. To me, as little as that step B, there's a chink in their armor now. I mean, if these two states could do it, all you need to do is find the right judge, Tony, that is sympathetic for the sport and would take a look. I'm not saying he's going to agree with us. Maybe he'll agree with HISA. But at least you're getting a third party who's going to look at what the hell's going on. But it should never come to this. It should never come to this.
Well, and now, on that topic, and this is, and in fact, there's a Mike Yerch on Twitter wants me to ask JJ and Tony this question, because you know, you both have been around half a century, essentially, in the game. But, Jay, when you say that it never should have come to this, there is a case to be made that
we did
not keep the house in order. And I mean, I've got, like everybody, there's things I think we've done well.
Oh, yeah.
There's things that have been overlooked. Mike here is saying, ask Tony and JJ about the cheating that has gone on historically and systemically. Now, I don't see what exactly the HISA structure is going to do to extricate that, but that's a separate topic. But I mean, talk about, Jay, what you've seen, Tony. You both have discussed this openly more than most people do.
Some of these things that have come about are self-inflicted because we haven't really stepped up to the plate and monitored or passed rules from our national organizations that could have been effective. You know, National Racing Commission and stuff like that. But you know, one of the indications when it comes to PEDs, you know, performance-enhancing drugs, is sometimes staring us right in the face, and our labs aren't picking up on it. Maybe they aren't as effective as they should be. Because when you see at times a trainer winning at 35 and 40%, that should send up a red flag. He's not always going to have the best horses and the greatest training methods. You know, but I'm not saying everybody that wins at that high rate of percentage is guilty, but it should be something that's monitored closely. But that's something that if you say in this business, whether you're a jock or another trainer, what are you talking about? This guy knows what he's doing. How, what do you mean he's winning at 35 or 40%? Well, that's almost impossible over long periods of time. So it should send up a red flag to say maybe we got to do more hands-on. And let's not have these things where you can't have out-of-competition testing. Yes, you should have out-of-competition testing. That should be one of the first steps to catching somebody if he has to be caught.
No doubt. And Jay, you over the years, you've addressed this. And you can, I think, discern as well as anybody what is, you know, pushing the envelope with legal and therapeutics. Listen. versus finding something that's undetectable.
Okay. Listen, when I had 100 horses to train, 50 at the track and 50 on the farm, I had two veterinarians that worked for me. And I will be the first to admit that I would do all legal what I needed to do to get a safe trip for Tony and give the horse a chance to win and the owner a chance to win and me a chance to win. But and anybody that didn't do that was foolish. But here's the deal, Steve and Tony. You're not going to stop the guys that are cheating now. You're not going to stop them. All you're going to do is make them stronger, because you're taking away what little bit we have to
exactly
do
right.
to go and do this. Right. But if they can't catch these guys like Navarro and those guys, okay?
Many of those. All right. Few other names come to hand.
Right. Right. But I don't want to. I don't want any incoming missiles coming to us here. You know what I mean? But the bottom line is, Tony, the testing might be sensitive, but it's not that sensitive, because they can't get it. They'll never be able to get it. And
it's never. It's not. The sensitivities are good. The pervasiveness. Yeah. There's things that they just don't even know to test for. And this has always been an arms race. And I'm not trying to cast aspersion on the harness people, but stuff came from Australia, Europe.
It is what it is.
Comes here and then makes its way over to the thoroughbred side. And what do you said something very really that's being overshadowed, Jay, and that is that by limiting legal therapeutics and creating a scenario that makes it even harder for the small everyday outfits that are doing their best, if they're limited with their tools
right.
to have the equine athlete perform at his best, and those that are taking an illegal edge are undetectable, what have you done here exactly?
You just made the cheat stronger, and the other folks who are trying to hang on by their nails are out of the game.
And then they catch somebody that just has maybe empty syringes and bute and Banamine and Lasix or something to treat a horse with that has colic at 2 o'clock in the morning, and they rule them off. They catch them. I remember when I was a kid in the late 60s and 70s, I would go down the shed row with the trainer that had my contract, and he'd say, "Hey, Tone, just keep an eye out." And he would go down the shed row, give him B12 and Durabilin, B12 complex and Durabilin. He had Bute and Banamine and injectables and stuff like that. But he was a trainer and a horseman that owned a farm, and he also knew a lot about veterinary medicine. So he had syringes. He wasn't pumping them up with PEDs, performance-enhancing drugs. He was pumping them up with what he could save his owner money or what he could charge the owner for and make money, this horse, we'll give him B12 and Durabilin complex, but we're going to give this horse something that was just therapeutic. But they've attacked those people, and they haven't really caught the big cheaters.
Well, that's
Heiss is not going to catch the big cheaters either.
Well, they tried to get the anti-doping, the ones that did the Olympics and did the Tour de France. They tried to get them to do it.
USADA.
They threw their hands up in the air and said, "We don't want nothing to do with horse racing. Nothing."
After a period, after this courtship period.
But what you've done with Heiss is just try to appease the public by selling them something they don't really understand. But it looks like, boy, we're really monitoring our sport. We are the authorities. And then you're also trying to appease the animal rights activists, which you'll never make them friendly towards the business.
Nope.
So stop appeasing the enemy, or stop giving the public some false security. Tell them the truth,
Here's the problem I have. You go to your local HVPA office and ask them questions about what's going on. They don't have the answers. They don't know. They don't know. And I really like Scott Peck here. He's a good guy, okay? He's been around a long time, older than me. He said, "JJ, don't ask me, because I don't know what to tell you, because things change right here. You can ask John Mooney when he comes on. Not this Saturday, maybe two Saturdays ago, you cannot run a four-year-old that never started. He's automatically on the vet's list.
He's got to work for the vet.
He's got to work for the vet, and he's got to have blood drawn, and he's got to do all that." So, John, had Jed Duro, who is now the director of racing, racing secretary, email HISA and say, okay, we got 3-4-year-old maidens that never started, and they're ready to run. He said, okay, you can take their entries. 2 days later, they walked it back, and they made them scratch those three horses. I mean...
Well, I got a story, too. There's a friend of mine that has horses in Kentucky, Alexis Hardhill, the daughter of the prominent vet, who has the late prominent vet, Alec Hardhill, right? She's got a horse that she gave a year to. You know, he had something that was able to heal, like a hairline fracture, a cannon bone,
whatever,
or something like that. She gave it a year because she's not a greedy person that tries to get him back over there. Do you know they wouldn't accept the entry after a year? After so many months, it's either 6 months or a year, Kentucky wouldn't, she said they won't accept the entry. She's got to run him someplace like Mountaineer or someplace. And I says, why? She said, because I gave this horse an adequate amount of time, an ultimate amount of time, a year. I says, well, isn't that counterproductive? Isn't that telling a guy, well, if I give this horse 4 months, I can run him. If I give him 6 months, I can't run him. You're actually being detrimental long-term to the horse and the business.
Well, the business, I mean, in terms of driving out owners, and you know, the part of this that, again, remains unanswered is the financials and who it's going to cost. You know, yesterday, and I want to slip this in, I mentioned that, you know, we'll get the news of the day in as the morning progresses. As JJ mentioned, John Mooney, who is retiring, and
Saturday's his last day.
Saturday, unbelievable. So it is, frankly, opportune that we're here, and because John is
he's been in his game
forever.
His whole family's been in his game.
Yeah.
You know,
so we'll get John on here. Andy Simoff is going to come by.
Okay,
he's going to drive the van. He's going to drive the van right into this tent.
Yeah, and Simoff would do that.
And he'll probably unload a couple. If he does, I'm jumping on one of them.
You know, you either like or dislike Andy Simoff.
What do you mean? Everybody likes Andy.
That's not true.
That's not true.
I really like the guy. You know why? Because he's like me. He shoots from the hip. If you don't like it, don't listen.
Well, you and I were in that category.
You know? I love it.
JJ, you and I were in that category. They either liked me or they hated me. You know?
Sister Tony, and when they hated us because we won too much.
There's the truth.
And Tony would say to me, Jay, you can never win too much. And it's the honest to God, that's the true statement.
Because there's going to be periods when you don't win. I want to mention from yesterday in the Honorable Miss, Wesley Ward, of course, the winner with Kamari, and David Wolichuk came over with the Ohio bred with Emma Devil, who the people who are saying, oh, it was egregious and she was being run over her head, you must not be familiar with split times and with speed figures, because she was as fast as any of the fillies in there. She bled out of both nostrils, and visibly.
But let's limit Lasix.
Well, this is
you know,
happening.
Is that ridiculous?
This is
whoever said Lasix isn't therapeutic didn't ride in the 70s and come back covered with blood. Or I can remember a horse I won on, Charlie Star. She came to the head of the lane. I saw some splattering on my pants, but before I could do anything, she hit the ground and she died on the racetrack. That was before they used Lasix as they use it now. Lasix is therapeutic. Whatever the downside is of Lasix, it is therapeutic, and it stops horses from bleeding and allows them to perform at an optimum level without any pain from or discomfort from bleeding.
Tony, this is what I don't want to see, and I'm looking into my crystal ball, and I see it. You're on the front end with a horse, okay, and he gushes.
Right.
And he goes down.
Been there, done that.
Okay, he goes down because... He just couldn't do it anymore. And you got jockeys and horses falling over you. That is going to happen, Steve. I don't know exactly when, but it's going to happen.
Well, was it Devil's Be Gone? Who was the you know, I think it was Devil's Be Gone. Jerry Brown talks about this, and the concern that you're going to have a circumstance where there's going to be a nationally televised race. And you're going to have a visible bleeder that is going to come back, and there'll be an outcry and an absolute vicious attack on the game from that standpoint. Now let me slip in this for David.
I used to ride with amber goggles, and amber and red blood turns to orange. I had a horse I rode that I looked down in my pants and they were splattered blood, and that's before the use of Lasix.
I talked to David Wolichek, reached out to him this morning, and the filly is 100%, and in fact came back and ate up dinner last night, had a late night snack, and then had breakfast first thing this morning. Ice cold legs, no temperature, no nothing. The groom stayed up with her all night and watched her and monitored her, and then this morning they concluded, I mean, she's herself. And so David really appreciated everybody's concern about Amadevil. She's a trooper and a terrific
Where's she stabled?
Well, typically Ohio, and
I know him.
David's been on with me when she was, I was excited as anybody for her to show up at Saratoga. And for those that think that, oh, she bled because he ran her over her head, it makes no sense, frankly.
She bled because she was deprived what she needed.
She has typically used Lasix
and that's not fair to the public, because so much of the time you're looking at horses that have performed on Lasix, and then they go to where they can't use Lasix, and you can't really decipher what their performance is going to be
until they run.
A horse
player's
nightmare. Now, is that fair to the betting
public? No, it's not. And in fact, you had over the weekend, you had a race at Monmouth and a race at Saratoga, the Caress at Saratoga, where very interestingly Bruce Brown wins with Robin Sparkles. She came off Lasix for the graded stake. Then there were others that, that were going over to Monmouth that came back on Lasix. And so you're having to make this determination and try to basically, it's the wheel of fortune.
Okay. Well, when you see visibly blood coming out of both sides of the nostril, you know what's going on? The blood is filled the horse's
lungs,
and the horse, the blood has to go somewhere.
So it comes out the weakest spot.
So it comes out the weakest spot, and it comes out the horse's nose. And you got to realize one thing, Steve. A horse got a really, really small throat. So just a little bit will stop him from bleeding. I mean, stop him from getting his air, because the blood is just too much, And you know what? And I'm not saying that I haven't had them. I'm not saying I won't have one again. Only till January, but when you get them back at the barn, you're trying to cool them out, and they're bleeding from both sides, and they're looking at you like, "Please help me, please help me." And if you don't have that feeling inside that this is an animal that's laying his body down for you, and you're depriving him or her from giving. Not so much winning, but keeping them so they don't comfortable die.
Yeah, just so that they can compete at the best of their ability. And the problem we've got is, this all gets back to that same. We were having this discussion, Jay, 15 years ago when the whole Lasix debate was starting. You and John Parada would explain, what was going on here. You both came from an era as horsemen of pre-Lasix. And you understood what the benefit was, and
didn't this even make it more humane to where when pre-Lasix you used to take their water away, take their hay and straw away, draw them to, and that's humane, but it stopped them. That's inhumane, and it stopped them from bleeding because they would be dehydrated, but they'd still have to go out there and run 3/4 of a mile. Where Lasix, 2 hours before the race or whatever the time period is, four hours, you can give them a diuretic that will relieve them of that excess fluid and lower the blood pressure, and they can go out there and be comfortable because their mouths aren't dry, their throats aren't dry, they've been not deprived of water, and they can go out there and perform. Lasix is therapeutic. It's not a performance-enhancing drug. It's therapeutic, and it stops a horse from the inhumane and the terrors of bleeding. It stops that. It,
out of curiosity, because you both have, I'm sure, dealt with this, and we haven't, it hasn't come up in a long time, actually. David obviously will, take her back to Thistledown and get her going again, and whether she faces
open company there. I mean, she had an open company allowance when recently. Otherwise, you know, she's got her hat full of Ohio bred.
She runs her best races on Lasix.
She does. And you know, that includes, 90 buyer performances, mid-80 buyer performances. For those that said she was over her head, frankly...
XM Radio. Thoroughbred Horse Racing is back in Virginia as Colonial Downs conducts its More Racing, More Money summer season presented by Woodford Reserve. An early week racing schedule and average daily purses of $625,000. The 9-week meet runs from July 11th through September 7th with racing every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m. Wager on Colonial's 50-cent pick 5 with a low 12% takeout and a new carryover provision. All races will be broadcast on TVG this summer. Colonial Downs racing Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out.
Thanks, Case. I have no idea why we're getting. I'm back. That was strange. JJ was talking about getting a horse back after a bleeding incident. Same is also true about horses that entrap, right? When they lose their air, and then getting them, getting them to not be concerned that they're going to, have it happen again.
It is no secret that I have an Herbaline called Dominator. And I have six different products, and it helps the horses. It really helps the horses. But when you're using herbs, you need to use them correctly. And if you do use them correctly, I can give you some benefit. But when I developed my bleeder blend, I did it so to play off Lasix. I made an herbal blend that will theoretically... I tried to make it the same as Lasix without putting a diuretic in it. So when you use my herbal products and you use Lasix, your horse is not going to bleed. Okay? It's not going to bleed. But come from what I read and what I hear, come January 1, if you're not have FDA-approved supplements, you cannot use them. Now, that doesn't make any sense to me. The FDA will not approve any supplement, not just my herb.
If it's just a natural compound of...
Right. And if you're a veterinarian and the drug you have in the back of your truck They're not FDA approved. You're not supposed to be able to use them, Tony.
Well, and these herbal supplements, they can be used by humans, but we can't use them to benefit a horse.
No.
That's so ridiculous. But we can use them on humans without any repercussions. But we can't use them on horses. Give me a break.
I mean, you could. I mean, when guys call me up and say, do you need to help me?
As well as Freeze and Fire, Maryland's 5/8 Mile Training Track completes the full-service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA...
Yeah. Not me, but I know one's running today.
Hold on. Are we giving that one out or not?
Sure, I'll give it out. It's not my horse.
We're back, and we're having the Wi-Fi is a little. The Wi-Fi is weird. It's a little like right now. It's strong as can be, but it that's twice. It just has dipped down to.
Maybe they're not used to JJ and me's conversation.
Guys, take all the oxygen, out of the room.
Which, you know. If they could write a book, Tony, I don't know if they put our.
Well, wait a minute. You've threatened for years. About writing everything you wanted to know.
Everything you wanted to know about horse racing, I was afraid to ask. I was. But my daughter's a pretty successful trainer, and she's still training.
Oh, so you got to wait till the family.
I don't really care what they think about me, but I feel for you. You know what I mean?
You and I could write a book together, and it would be very interesting because some of the stories that we tell, we don't have to make them up. We lived them.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I mean, it's...
Dick Francis got nothing on J.J. Gracie and Tony Black. No. We lived those stories. We didn't have to make those stories up.
You know, I want to move a little bit away from, you know, we can wrangle and wring our hands on this topic with ISA a lot, but take a few minutes here, maybe to the top of the hour, and would love for you two to talk about, you know, some of those. Good. We got John. You want to bring John in now?
Whatever you want.
No, we'll. That's fine. John, come over by Tony by the. There we go. There, John Mooney.
The legend.
John, you remember Tony Black? He's won some races out there on the...
Yeah, I think on my that. 4,500 was the Caesar Rodney Handicap, the 200,000 for Christophe Clement. 4,500th win, Christophe Clement, Caesar Rodney Handicap, 200,000. The only thing, I didn't follow orders because I swung him out at the head of the stretch and won by five.
He
told me to stay on the fence.
You got fired.
Yeah, I got fired. But Jose Santos rode him a couple weeks before that at Monmouth Park and come down the stretch with a handful of horses and no place to go. I didn't want to do that. But Christophe never rode me again.
Unbelievable. Let John grab that mic. And John, what a pleasure. We haven't spoken in way too long, but I, like so many people around the industry, I obviously we're going to wish you a happy retirement, but I mean, you're part of the firmament and have been dedicated to the game your whole life.
Well, I have. It's been a great life. I love the game. Born in it, I've been in it for generations. And frankly, I'll miss it. But it's time for me to go on and do some other things in life that I haven't had the opportunity to do. So I'm looking forward to retirement. I'll miss a lot of people here. I've been a lot of years at Delaware Park, and especially in the Mid-Atlantic. But overall, I just feel I've had a great life, and I wish everyone here the best, and I'm sure it'll do well.
Well, you know, I've been friends with John Mooney, I don't know how long. So one, I'll give a little story with you. We're at Colonial Downs, and John calls about me. He says, Jay, you got to do me a favor. I said, what's that, John? He said, you got to take a horse down to Richmond, Virginia, and they're doing this, like a Today Show, okay? And they want to go promote Colonial Downs. So he said, do you think you can handle that for me? I said, as long as I have some ace promazine, and we put the horse, give him a little ace to keep him quiet, and dress the jockey up, and I'll saddle him. And here I am in the middle of Richmond, Virginia, in one of the craziest roads in the world, doing horse racing. You know what I mean? Because John had the vision back then that if you can't bring horse racing to you, we got to bring horse racing to them. You know what I mean? And he still does that to this day. I mean, but the thing of it is, when they hold your hands doing things in this sport, it gets frustrating, you know? Especially with all these new rules coming in. I mean, when you know what's right and you know what's wrong, and you've been around as long as he has and I have been, you just can't swallow it anymore. John?
Well, you know, JJ, Mr. Mooney describes or is a perfect representative of respect, credibility, and integrity. And that's what he brings into the business when he walks into any racing venue. And people like him will be sorely missed.
Well, I will lay a statement we had at breakfast one morning, and he said to me, and I'm sure, you know, don't take it wrong, and I don't mean anybody specific, that if I can't do what I'm used to doing, I'm going to walk away. And with all these new rules coming up, Mr. Mooney knows that it's too frustrating for him to be able to have people shove things down his throat when he knows it's wrong. You know what I mean? I mean, you got to realize, this man has been... John, tell him who your father was.
and your grandfather, who won the Derby.
Right, you know?
Well, first of all, I think what they're trying to do is probably the right thing to do in some areas.
But we can't implement all this at one time.
Much better recognition from the public than we get right now. Unfortunately, most of the stories that are written on our industry today are on the negatives.
Sure.
And we can't afford to let that continue. I've been a director and on the board of the Thoroughbred Racing Protective Bureau for over 30 years. The worst thing, in my opinion, that happened to racing was when the tracks opted to not provide their own security and investigative teams. I really feel that if we had had the TRPB investigators in place today, we wouldn't have gone through what we went through the last 2 years. The only way you uncover schemes and cheaters is boots on the ground, and we were missing that. You can do all the testing in the labs you want. They'll always be ahead of you. So consequently, we've been really tarnished. We've got organizations against us, and something has to be done. Now, in my opinion, there are a lot of rules that and requirements that are put in place that aren't necessary, but that's my feeling. A lot of this reporting is going to be too extensive and expensive for tracks to be able to keep up with, and the data is not going to amount to that much.
Well,
but on the other hand, I recall a number of years ago right here in the Mid-Atlantic when we had a Mid-Atlantic medication meeting, our keynote speaker for the luncheon was Congressman Rooney, who told the whole group, the last thing you ever want to do is be under the feds. The federal can't get anything done. It would be a disaster. So for him now to be in charge of the NTRA and supporting this is quite a surprise to me. But maybe his help is what we need. But at any rate, it's here. We're going to have to deal with it. I'm really against the stewards extending all of these excessive fines to riders. And I'll let Tony make his own comment on that.
You've been in
a business all your life, and you've been instructed and taught how to ride, and you're taught to win.
Exactly.
Katie's excessive penalties for one or two strikes over is, in my opinion, absolutely ridiculous. I think it also hurts the wagering and the general public. They feel like they're being cheated. Tony?
You're absolutely right, and that's what my comment is. When you have a jockey who's been trained to ride a horse and get the optimum performance from him, you have to allow him to use his instinct, his knowledge of the horse that he, and what he's feeling while he's on that horse's back. Now, when you take that away from him, you're affecting in a negative way the public, the betting public. You're affecting the owner, of course, and in a negative way. You're affecting everybody concerned with that horse. There's been some disqualifications where, before the race was official, they disqualified the horse. One, I think, was at, I can't think of the track, but I can think of the rider, was Vernon Bush. And they took the purse away and they gave him Dace. Now, if you have people in that steward stand that are monitoring the race and know what they're looking at, you don't need a blanket rule. You need them to express and to put their authority forward and say, this is abuse, this is use. And that's because they know what they're looking at. But you need people that are monitoring what jockey's performance is and know what they're looking at to make these statements. Not somebody that just hasn't just maybe took entries in the office and became a steward, that never sat on a horse's back, that never did anything but watch a few races. You need people that were hands-on experience in the trenches of the racing industry.
On that topic, John, I'd love you to, with your retirement and with the very unfortunate illness and passing of John Wayne, this jurisdiction loses two accomplished and veteran and experienced individuals that were dedicated to the sport. One of the threats from within, quote unquote, is the lack of horsemen directing the business, and it as much as anything going on, it's alarming to me that there's like a generation that of middle management that doesn't really, they don't understand the betting game, they don't appreciate the horse player the way they should, although that has gotten better in some areas. You're famous for having introduced new wagers, and especially when Delaware Park was reborn. Talk a little bit about that theme and your thoughts and what you've witnessed basically over the last 45 years.
Well, I've always felt very strongly that if you're going to manage a facility, a pari-mutuel facility, there's three parties. There's the association, there's a horseman, and there's the wagering patron. It's very, very important to take that patron seriously. I've always felt that you have to, in a way, manage the patron. You don't want him betting excessively and not being able to manage his money, because if you let that happen, you're going to lose a customer. Unfortunately, I think we put way too many gimmicks into our package.
You're from the Charlie Sellers school of limited offerings.
Well, I'm from the Sellers school in a way, and probably my own father's. But I grew up in this business, we had eight races a day.
Yeah.
We had a daily double. Later, we had an exactor.
Then
might have been the Quinella before that.
Right, right.
And only two of them a day. Roughly 39% of the people playing the whips took money home. And we didn't have them investing huge amounts of money into a gimmick that they couldn't get a return on. Now we have a patron that comes in. He might spend 30 minutes. He's looking at 20 simulcast signals at once. And he winds up playing numbers. But you can't play numbers in the pari-mutuel game on horse racing and win, in my opinion.
can't do it in the lottery either.
No, you can't, Tony. So here we have a patron, and he's coming in, and he's losing all his money in 40 minutes. And I don't think it's good for the industry or good for the game, and I think it's taken him away from the art of handicapping. And the enjoyment should be in handicapping, learning the bloodlines, knowing the difference between a route horse, a short horse, or a grass horse versus a dirt horse. So I think there's a lot of re-educating that has to be done, and we have to find a way to make this sport interesting to the person that loves the equine side of it and isn't necessarily in it strictly for gambling.
What's been, John, your feeling, and on this topic, I'm not sure about Delaware's history, frankly. I mean, right now you've got a very attractive multi-race wager takeout as part of your menu, but from a takeout perspective, how has your philosophy potentially changed? Just curious over the years, what you've done or what you've tried to promote to essentially help the churn. I mean, because that's what you're talking about. You're talking about keeping a patron, keeping that money and
keeping
that bankroll.
Happy.
Yeah, keeping the bankroll alive.
Well, I think the biggest mistake that happened in our industry was when some new states that started up 30 years ago came in with gimmicks wanting to take 25 and 30% of the pool. And there's no way that you're ever going to be able to get anyone with that amount of retention to stay active in it. I always thought that we should be between 15 and 17% on the whips pools and maybe 19 on the gimmick. I think that's plenty. The one thing that I always felt strongly about was I always felt that there should be tiers in the amount of takeout on track versus off track versus accounts. I was involved in Puerto Rico years ago when they put in an off track betting, and if you bet off track, the takeout was 30%. The 30% made up for the revenues the association was losing by you not coming to the facility. And it helped cover the cost of that operation. For gamblers today that think that if racetrack can exist on the percentage they get from a simulcast wager, they're absolutely kidding themselves. And unfortunately, there's going to come a day when legislatures are not going to give us the percentages we're getting from other revenue sources like slots and casino. And when that happens, these huge purses we're seeing are going to disappear. And that will bring down also the value of the horse, in my opinion, which in many cases is overvalued now.
John, the advent of the computer assisted wagering teams, how has Delaware dealt with it? With the batch betters?
Well, for a number of years we were opposed to batch betters and we didn't allow them in, and there are other tracks in the Thoroughbred Racing Associations that held their ground and didn't. But unfortunately, with so much money now being wagered off track, and the commitments you have to make to get simulcast agreements, you have to let them in. I really think the experiment in New Jersey is going to prove a point.
The fixed odds.
The fixed odds. Because the fixed odds people aren't going to batch wagers.
No.
So we'll see how many we're willing to switch to get away from that. It's wrong. It's cheating the betting public. It's taking money away from the track. And it doesn't make us successful. Whether you can publish all the big numbers you want and handle, if you're only getting 3.5% of it and splitting it with your horsemen, you're not going to stay in business.
Well, there's certain,
frankly,
there's certain racetrack operations that aren't even getting 3.5% that are basically giving away their signal for the sake of inflated handle numbers.
Well, there's no doubt about that.
Yeah,
and it's very, very discouraging to see us losing our on-track patron because of this and because of the kickbacks they're getting from account wagering companies who have no investment in it.
No bricks and mortar involvement.
No, they don't.
Yeah.
But it's where we are, and It's going to make it very difficult in the future because other than big event days, you're not going to have the patrons you need to pay off on the bottom line all the expenses involved in putting on the show.
Putting on the show. And Fred Pope. This is the inverted pyramid that Fred Pope wrote about for years, that it was an unsustainable model to have. And this all goes back to the 70s and the idea that, take bets from off track. It's like found money, so we really don't, whatever we get will be plenty. It'll be found money.
You're right. Now, you have machines over here, okay? Now, I do TV, so I see people around. People will sit on their phone and bet with their OTB. Yep. They won't even walk over to this machine.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the problem. We get way more money when they bet here on the track.
Of course.
But they all just bet on their phone. And that's really the killer in this game, John. We just can't do that.
Well, the phone is a great convenience, especially for somebody that can't get away from the office to get to the track.
No, but I'm talking right here at the track.
When they do it right in your own facility, that's not good.
No.
If you can design it where the person betting in your facility on his phone has to go through your pari-mutuel system at the track, then there's a benefit to
it. Well, and Naira has the best possible scenario with that, with Naira Bets, where anything through Naira Bets is treated in terms of its breakout as an on-track wager. So it works.
Yes, and Oaklawn Park did a good
job.
And it's something everyone's going to have to look at because it's getting very difficult to get the staffing you need to operate your pari-mutuel machines, especially when you may only need them one day a week.
That's a great point.
It's the game's changed so much.
John
Mooney. That's a problem overall in every industry, unfortunately.
That's true. Frankly, even on track, I was at Fairgrounds this winter, leading up to during Risen Star Week. They were only operating the dining room, and Fairgrounds had the greatest reputation in terms of dining ever, anywhere. They could only staff the dining rooms fully on the big Saturdays, on the four or five big Saturdays. They weren't doing any full food service any other time during the meet. I was stunned. Because they don't have wait staff, they don't have kitchen staff.
Well, that's true. And then there's several things that go into this. As I mentioned earlier, you have a new type of wagering person. He comes in for half hour, 45 minutes, and bets five racetracks and leaves. He's not going to a dining room. He never sees a live horse on the outside. He's looking at a TV screen. I really feel that if somebody's interested in the sport and they love it, they want to see that horse come to the paddock, see how he acts in the paddock, see him saddle, watch him warm up, see how the jock feels on him, then make their wager. We've gotten away from that, and it's not for the best of our industry, believe me, because you're losing the value of knowing and understanding the horse and what the industry's about.
So Saratoga, maybe this is part of the problem. There's been such the success of Keeneland, Del Mar, Saratoga, the boutique meets, Oaklawn during its, they're just crazed in Hot Springs and the region for the game. But there's been such evidence of success in the specialty meet and the boutique meet that it's permeating a lot of thought on that front, and so that part of it elsewhere year in year out at a Delaware, at a Philly, at a Parks, at Hawthorne, how do those tracks essentially, how do the B tracks, how do they make their product appealing to bring people to the racetrack other than Delaware Handicap Day?
Well, I can't disagree with you because the most successful tracks financially in this country are the ones with short meets. The Del Mars, the Oaklawn Parks, the Saratoga. Now, when you get into your very, very heavily populated areas such as the Mid-Atlantic, and there's tracks within 30 miles of one another, and you have four or five horsemen's groups to deal with, and they all want to be home and have year-round racing, it just depletes the whole product. It cuts the amount of purse money available, and I think it hurts the meat. If you go back years ago when Delaware Park ran 51 days at the most, it was right up there with the elite. It also affects the bettor and the patron. You can keep a patron interested for a month or two, but you take him away from his wife and family and business for 8-9 months of the year to be at the races, he's not going to be with you too many years.
In other words, more is not better. We've saturated the areas with racing. We've diluted the fan base, and we diluted the horse population. And you can't do that in a sport that depends on the patron, the horse. You can't saturate an area with racing, and that's why those 57-day and 60-day meets were so successful, because the area had what they called product anticipation. We can't wait till the racetrack gets here. Yes, same way they couldn't wait till the circus got there.
It's very true.
Product anticipation is important in any industry. I know. I used to own a Reader's, and they couldn't wait till the Reader's opened in March or April.
after a cold winter.
They couldn't wait after a cold winter to get water ice and a custard.
Well, that's right, Tony. Even being in the business, when I started out, your race meets were short.
Yeah.
You might work 5-6 tracks a year. And believe it or not, by the time you'd been at one for two and a half months, you were waiting for it to close and ready to get on to the next one. that was felt by customers, horsemen, and anyone employed in the business. So it's all evolved to a different type of business now, and we're going to have to figure out how to make it work.
All you have to do on that topic, in terms of multi-jurisdiction or meets, is look at what's going on at the start of this Del Mar meet, which has been absolutely fabulous. The Saturday card again has got a big, robust sets of fields, two terrific stakes, the Bing Crosby and the San Diego on Saturday, and the fact is the horsemen, from everything I heard, the Santa Anita meet went on so long and just droned on. The horse players lose interest. The horsemen needed a change of pace, a change of venue. I mean, there's been nothing more detrimental to Southern California racing than Hollywood Park going away, where the Hollywood, Santa Anita, Del Mar, and a nice rotation, it keeps everything fresh. Rick Hammerly talks about this all the time. And in New York, too. Even the moving from Aqueduct to Belmont, and all we do is move 6 miles down the road, but yet the configurations are different, the condition books are different, the product morphs. Then you come up to Saratoga for 40 days, and there's just such a freshness to that. It's a problem. And you talk about the Mid-Atlantic, John, and you've seen this. I mean, between Laurel essentially running year round, I mean there's virtually no break, and there'll be just the Pimlico Preakness meet once the renovations go on. Then you got Parks, which runs essentially 46 weeks a year,
yeah,
give or take.
And then
the night tracks as well.
And certain tracks, they run these limited amount of days, but they're year-round. And you think of a place like Parks, where you have a beautiful setting to bring the kids and families to on Saturday, and you don't race a couple Saturdays a year. How are you going to generate a new fan base racing a couple Saturdays a year and just racing Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday?
Yeah, because you can't bring people out. John, talk about that a little bit more.
Well, unfortunately, to draw these meets out as long as they are, try to run year-round to satisfy a lottery bill or whatever it might be that you're working under with a casino, is detrimental to the whole business.
Yeah.
For one thing, let's just look at the financial side. You only have a certain amount of money to spend in marketing and advertising. If you're at Del Mar and you put all that into 2 months of the year, you can do a lot of promotion. If you're a Laurel and you need to put that into the budget 12 months of the year, you don't have anything to work off of. And, it's It's just a fact. And I cannot see where any track benefits running 2 days a week. If you're going to maintain a backside and have training 6-7 days a week, and you need exercise riders and all the people you need to handle that horse, and you need good jockeys, you're not going to hold them there 2 days a week. They can't make a living.
I can remember riding 13 straight days because the track was running 6 days a week, and you'd go to another track that was running on the dark day, or there was a holiday where they raced Monday, and Monday was normally a dark day, and you rode as a jockey maybe 13 straight days without a day off, right. And you worked every morning with people that knew the business. But it's just hard to do it when you're racing 3 days a week. All you're doing is barely making a paycheck as a jockey or an owner, and then you're shipping your horses someplace to run on the dark days. It's hard to do it.
Well, you're absolutely right, Tony, and of good examples on a race day even here where we're running 3-4 day a week. A lot of our horses, 30-35% a day, are coming from another track that isn't running. Unfortunately, you don't get the owner and the participants that are spending the money here to see their horse run. And when you don't have them here, how long are you going to take? How many years are you going to be able to do that when they aren't here to really support your facility? When you have owners and trainers on the grounds and they're in...
Sirius XM Radio. Thoroughbred horse racing is back in Virginia as Colonial Downs conducts its More Racing, More Money summer season presented by Woodford Reserve. An early week racing schedule and average daily purses of $625,000. The 9-week meet runs from July 11th through September 7th with racing every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m. Wager on Colonial's
second leg of this Travel Odyssey that started last week, of course, with Monmouth and the Haskell.
In case this happens, the backup tractor was actually the one that pulled the faulty tractor and the gate off the rail. And, you know, credit the maintenance guys and the assistant starters for, you know, scrambling to get it done, but like you said, it's a split-second decision, and it's not like you have 5 minutes to weigh the options.
Yeah.
You know, you have to make the call and live with it. And, you know, my dad, who had bet the winner and had the exacta, said, what are you going to do? I mean, these things happen, and you can't fault them for doing that. But, you know, on Twitter, there's going to be consternation no matter what. I mean, if someone decided they were going to hand free money to everybody, there'd be people complaining that, you know, oh, man.
A list as long as my arm. And these were tracks money, you know, like in the 70s that had television coverage, radio coverage, and all as you could see was the grandstand full of heads and faces.
It's funny, and I'm somebody that doesn't live and die necessarily on attendance as a metric for, you know, how the game is doing. I mean, I understand it, but I mean, it you know, you look at places that are doing, you know, nice business without the gate, and it's healthy from that perspective. But I think it's why, you know, what Canterbury is doing, and it was 7,500 basically a day. Obviously, Del Mar and Saratoga, when you see that track apron full, you know, like today at Saratoga. I mean, yesterday, the nice weather, you know, 17,000, 20,000, 22,000, you know, and then 35 on the weekends. It you know, those images are heartening, To me, it's a very difficult and somewhat frustrating conversation point, John, about the attendance topic, because if you take the per capita, the per capita bet, you know, better money, you may have had 100, you know, you do 2 million and the average per capita is 200 per person, you had 100,000 people bet on your product that day with only 800 in the building. So it's a weird, it's just a different era we're dealing with.
Well, listen, John and Jed, who's the racing secretary, they elect, we used to run 115. They elected to bring it to 1230, you know, to avoid as much competition as you want. And I think that's really helped. But I think now, and John and I spoke about this, is we try to stagger our post times so we're not up against another track. So when they're betting on us, we're the only track that's running. So we're going to get people who have to gamble are going to gamble on us. And quite frankly, not because I work here, but they give you a good product. They do the best they can with what they have. Okay? John always told me, I'd rather have 8 races in competitive fields than loop water 10 races. And that's truth. I mean, no doubt. Right, John? I mean, that's...
Well, you're absolutely right, JJ. I really have to say that in order to attract a better, to attract people to that pool, you've got to have runners.
Sure. You know, give them something.
And you know, it's a shame what's happened. We've got all of these graded races and races that are six figures to $1 million, and you take a look and there's 4 or 5 horses in them. It might all be out of 2 trainers' barns alone, and then you want the handicapper to figure out what to do with it. It's not good.
John, let me ask you a question. How do you feel about the super trainers, the Chad Browns, the Todd Fletchers, these guys that have between them most of their very good horses in the world? I mean, do you think by giving these top guys all the good stock, diluted the game?
I think it discourages somebody else from investing more in the game because he feels if he can't go with them, he's not going to be able to be successful. I'm really against the number of horses that trainers are allowed to have under their care. They're only as good as the people working for them.
Right.
And you know, what happens is you get a lot of, in my opinion, very qualified young horsemen coming up that'll never get an opportunity. So, when you look at the number of top trainers we've had in the country and they're out of horses, it's amazing. But, you know, it's the way it is.
Well, and the reason why people want to go to these top trainers, they got the best riders. They got the best of the best. Where a guy that maybe's got 10, 15, 20, he's trying to do the best he can, but he doesn't have the owners with the deep pockets that are willing to say, here's carte blanche, do what you need to do. And that's the difference. The difference is you need to have good stock and the ability to do with that stock what you want. And when you're a smaller trainer, you don't have guys with deep pockets. You got a guy that's working, you know, and wants a horse for some fun. You know what I mean? And they are the backbone of the business. The small guy is the backbone of the business to make this thing go. You know what I mean?
No doubt. There's no doubt.
And unfortunately, they're by the wayside now. And when this, I don't know exactly what's going to happen on January 1, 2023 with HICID, what they're going to do as far as medication. But if you take Lasix and all this therapeutic medicine away from these guys, they're never going to close entries. It's impossible. When you have a horse that bled and you were going to run him back in 3 weeks, now you're going to run him back in 6 weeks, maybe.
Well, and the worst part on that front, honestly, is if you are from a small to medium-sized outfit or you are a small to medium-sized owner, do you have the resources to turn that horse out for 6 months to have him go into the hyperbaric chamber,
right,
and have all the treatments and all the things? And frankly, there's a school of thought, and there's even probably at the root of this whole direction a mindset from a certain set of policymakers in the game that want to push those people right out of the game. That if you don't have the financial wherewithal to do all those things for that horse, you don't belong in the game. And to me, this has been a class warfare scenario from the outset. And that, to me, you're going to end up with two separate industries. You're going to have the elite managed industry, and you're going to have those that end up may end up, this Louisiana, West Virginia scenario with the injunction may be the start of that crossroad where a certain segment of the industry operates outside of HISA, and the quote-unquote elite portion of the industry operates under HISA.
John, with Louisiana and West Virginia getting this injunction, that's not, that's a chink in their armor. That opens the door for Delaware or somebody else that might want to do it. You think that's feasible? Trying to get a judge to agree with you to hear this?
I don't think it is.
Why?
I think the major concerns are going to come in December.
Right.
When people realize what this is really going to cost and who's going to pay for it, and if you're certain states, you know the state isn't going to pay it. You know the horsemen don't want to pay it.
The owners are put upon enough,
and
the horse players are put upon enough.
Well, if some states want to charge a horse owner, that's not fair, in my opinion. If you get a horse owner that's competing in 6, 7, 8, 10 different states, is he going to be charged 10 times for the same thing? So these are things that are of great concern to me, and Delaware's a good example. Delaware doesn't have it in the budget to pay this. The track will get built in the end and the horsemen. And how do you bear the cost if you're not showing a profit now? So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. I have a real concern because I don't think you're eliminating any racing commissions. I don't think you're eliminating those racing commission stewards. Are you going to have to pay HISA for theirs? So there's a lot of things and answers that need to be, and problems that need to be resolved. I think they rushed this away too fast. They didn't take anybody's info and really
input
it.
Yep.
So now you're suffering the consequences. But at any rate, for instance, Delaware would not be in a position financially to go out and fight HISA, and they wouldn't win anyway. So.
Well, and John, aren't you as part of the Mid-Atlantic, the kind of group together, with Alan Foreman and Maryland and Pennsylvania and
the Mid-Atlantic has been very, very forward with everything.
Very much.
Alan Foreman,
yeah.
THA,
yep.
Mid-Atlantic Medication Committees, has involved every racetrack and every horseman's group and the breeders. Worked very diligently to get uniform rules regarding medication, regarding penalties, regarding restrictions. And I think we've been very successful, probably more successful in any area in the country. As far as I can see, they didn't take any of our advice or very little of it. And, I think we were four leaders. And
well,
I commend Alan Foreman for it, because he's held this together for a long time. And there was probably a lot of regulations made that weren't necessary, but anyways, that's where it is. And
well, you've got the same attitude I do, which is it's here. We're dealing with it. What choice really do you have? You have to, you have to acknowledge it, and at the same time, you have to air the grievances and the concerns of the people most directly affected: the horsemen, the riders, the owners, the horse players, and of course, the tracks are kind of a victim in all this. And John, it has to be of a concern that at some point, some of the racetrack operators are just fed up and. We already have a certain class of racetrack that is running racing only by, by construct in terms of gaming. So they would love to eliminate the racing portion if given the avenue and the exit strategy.
Well, if the reporting and all the other oversight becomes too costly for a racetrack,
then they'll...
It's working borderline right now. They may not have a choice. Financially, they may have to say, we can't continue this. And there's bound to be someone put in that position. But I'm only speaking on my thoughts, the way I see it from an industry. I'm not representing THA or Alan Foreman or anyone else.
Understood.
I understand all of the difficulty it's put on horse owners, horsemen, veterinarians in particular, who are, there's a tremendous shortage of, and the reporting requirements for them. If they do all of this and have to hire administrative help to do it on a daily basis, they're going to have to raise their costs to every one of these trainers and owners on the backside.
Exactly.
Who are having difficulty paying the bills now. So it's going to, well, it's unfortunately either going to be the wealthy or no one else.
It
keeps going this way.
Okay, so. That's been my that's
well,
been
gentlemen, my I've enjoyed this. I do have a meeting I need to leave and go to, but it's been a pleasure. Tony, certainly good to see you. I wish you well.
I just want to say one thing. I feel it's a pleasure, but it's an honor to be able to sit next to you with a man that knows so much and has so much history in the game of racing. Mr. Mooney, it was my privilege to be next to you today and listen to your thoughts.
Thank you, Tony.
And there's a tear in my eye when I see people like you leaving the game. But you paid your dues, and you've been a credit to the game for so many years. Thank you for all you've done. Thank you so much.
Well,
thank you, gentlemen.
John, thanks so much. And, of course, third generation, a grandfather that won the Kentucky Derby on Black Gold, a grandfather, a father that was instrumental in the development of many racetracks, including Woodbine?
Yes, primarily Woodbine, the Ontario Jockey Club. Yeah. My father worked for Mr. Taylor for 37 years. Yeah. So, but he'd been all over before. My grandfather,
well, the apple didn't fall far from your tree.
our roots are originally from New Orleans, Louisiana. So, anyway.
Well, that's the black gold portion of the story.
That's right. All right, gentlemen.
Thanks, John. We're going to take a break, take a midpoint break here, Casey, because I want to get a picture of JJ, Tony, and John together. And we'll come back to Delaware Park, one of the real hidden gems in not just mid-Atlantic racing, but anywhere in the game. And just a beautiful... beautiful little gem in the nestled in the park in the greatest paddock in the country. It's just a fabulous place. Back after this with more.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Thoroughbred horse racing is back in Virginia as Colonial Downs conducts its More Racing, More Money summer season presented by Woodford Reserve. An early week racing schedule and average daily purses of $625,000. The 9-week meet runs from July 11th through September 7th with racing every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m. Wager on Colonial's 50-cent pick 5 with a low 12% takeout and a new carryover provision. All races will be broadcast on TVG this summer. Colonial Downs racing Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get
your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
The PA Horse Breeders Association introduces the Pennsylvania Stallion Series. Four brand new races to be run at parks for PA-sired, PA-bred two-year-olds. There are two $100,000 contests on August 22nd, PA Day at the Races. September 24th, PA Derby Day, has two more races, each with a $200,000 purse. The PA Stallion Series. Yet another.